Byron Radio.
Excellent. So, as we said, about 22 hours from where we sit at present, William Coles, Finn Pollard was anchoring, and I say that quite deliberately, anchoring a wonderful roundtable debate discussion which was talking about the American president, the midterm elections, let's be precise, the midterm elections, and he left with the very enigmatic phrase, "The sun is rising or setting." Or something along those sort of lines, Finn, I seem to recall, was the thing. And I thought you just almost were riding off into the sunset, which was very evocative of all manner of things. And where next you turn up? Andrew David on the morning, you know, for the actual election. Finn has been pretty much working non-stop for the last 24 hours, really. More than that, really 30-odd hours, I would have thought, really, Finn. And you're still asleep, awake and conscious, which is good.
I'm still awake. Mm. whether I'm saying anything sensible anymore, I don't know.
Well, that's perfectly okay, and that's why we've got Eva and Ben and Rory to actually work through that. William, we're going to give you the chance to actually quiz these folk in detail as ever, but I think Rory had a very interesting question that he put to me when he arrived in the studio, and I said, well, not too sure, but I'm sure Finn Pollard would be able to answer that response. So, Rory, deliver your question, please.
So I was hearing a term being thrown around, at least before the elections actually began, of this kind of predicted blue swing, which I believe was the idea of the Democrats gaining a lot more seats after Trump and all of the controversy that's surrounded him. After all of the, a lot of these states have now voted, I believe there's four still uncast. We're seeing that there is a very slight majority of Republicans. Is that kind of what you expected?
Now, be honest, Finn. Come on, there.
Well, it depends. The Democrats have taken the House of Representatives, but they've fallen back in the Senate. And it was very interesting that with regards to the wave, there was a lot of suggestion during the course of today that it hadn't materialised. And there was a very interesting statistic that said if you go back to some of the recent elections that have been described as wave elections, I can't remember the precise, I mean 2008 for one, that actually the gap between the Democrats and the Republicans was comparable to the gap in some of those other elections. But that it's more difficult now to translate that into a big, to the similar size of seats changing hands because of the way that the districts are drawn in a lot of states. So a lot of seats are now very safely in one column or the other.
Does that help your question?
No, it does. Thank you very much.
That's fine. William, you were the Washington correspondent for News International for many a year. Have you reached the stage now where, being ensconced in Edinburgh, frankly, you don't really care about the American presidential midterms? Just what the hey? It's a tale of two cities. You know, it's the classic line of checks and balances and so on and so forth. And
No. We love it all. I've got one question for Finn, and it's pretty succinct. What are the chances now of the president being impeached?
I think still quite low because they would, although they could possibly get it through the House, he'd have to be tried in the Senate, and there's no sign of the Republicans being interested in going down that route at all. And I suspect Pelosi will be, I mean, I think she's as good as said, that she'd be wary of doing it unless there was a measure of Republican support. Now, it could all change. One of the things is that the Mueller investigation will be more secure now. It'll be much more difficult, I think, for Trump to remove him. And that may throw out data and prosecutions that change the whole dynamic. And the other thing, of course, is Pelosi will have to negotiate with her base, many of whom think that this, you know, impeachment will follow from this result. But my gut feeling at the moment is that's not going to be what they'll push for immediately.
Good. Thank you. Well, what a shame. I mean, that was all going to be part of the thrill. I thought that was why we were licking our lip for House of Representatives.
Oh, come now, Bill. You just step away from the excitement of News International stuff, etc. Ben, what are your views on the presidential election? Was it a case of you were wrapped with attention? You said, yes, I can only follow it on Siren Radio because that's why I wanted to listen to Finn's roundtable discussion. I wanted to listen to all 2 hours. Was it 2 hours or 3 hours you were on this
just
morning?
Just 2 hours.
2 hours, from 6 a.m. through to 8 a.m. I managed to catch it from 6:15, so that's pretty good, listening upstairs. It was very good, very impressive. What did...
I didn't follow it particularly closely. I followed it to a certain extent, but I didn't... I think my knowledge of American politics isn't as good as what it is UK politics. Hmm. So it's hard to follow slightly if you don't know the whole background. So I tried to educate myself slightly on different areas, say the Senate and the House and things like that. And I expected there to be a swing, but I didn't expect it. To be honest, I expected it as the way it was. I didn't expect it to be a large swing. I expected it to be some sort of swing, but I didn't expect it to be large because I still think there's, you know, for what Trump has done since his election, he's actually one of probably the only few politicians, whether you like him or not, that's actually followed through on what he said, whether you agree with it or not. And I think Republicans have then seen that as a good opportunity to vote for him again and vote for Republicans again as a way of increasing their chances of getting policies through. But largely, I still think there's a lot of people who've swayed to the other side, to Democrats, and want to see a change, you know, whether that be in one way or another. And I think it makes it... I think it makes American politics actually quite interesting because I think in the last 10, 15 years, I wouldn't say it's been boring, but it's certainly not been as much action as there is now. And I think it sets up well for the 2020 elections.
Now, Eva, you have spent the last 7 months, 8 months?
It was 8 months, actually. Eight months. Nearly 9 months.
In a place that to many Americans would be inconceivable.
Cut off.
Cut off is I mean, it's a bit like if you think of the worst part of Nebraska or Montana, the most the most godforsaken sort of land of the whole thing. Salt Fleet, of course.
This is
the place.
Alex's opinion on it.
I think that Salt Fleet make me feel like home, basically. But how was it?
It was okay. I mean, it was being cut off from the world, but somehow I managed and I got through it. So
these are the important
things. That's where
I've
been for the past
8 months. So did the American midterm elections impact at all, or was it a case of it's not going to impact the Salt Fleet population?
Do you know what? Because of being in the job that I've been in,
singing,
performing, entertaining, being 24/7.
Yep.
I haven't been able to follow any of the politics. I haven't really been able to at all. But I do agree with what Ben said. How Donald Trump, he is that leader that he does follow through with a lot of the things he says.
I can see Finn grimacing at this moment in time because we're getting that bit of balance coming across here. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt. Was it Roosevelt or one of the early presidents of the 20th century who said that he used the presidency as a soapbox to kind of bang home his message?
The bully pulpit, I think. That's
exactly,
that's
bully
the phrase,
pulpit.
Yes,
the
yes.
bully pulpit.
Yes, yes.
So I mean, is this a case of actually, you know, we're seeing with Donald somebody who's simply going to be consistent because, after all, Clinton and Obama both had similar setbacks in their midterms?
That's certainly true, and it's certainly very common. And I mean, I agree on some things that he's followed through. I mean, obviously, the Iran, cancelling the Iran deal is an obvious one. You know, trying to renegotiate the NAFTA agreement, although how far.
But as we're just about to celebrate 30 years since the Berlin Wall was put down, we don't want to build another one in Mexico, do we, really?
No, well, I mean, there's no sign of the wall going. I mean, there's no money to pay for it, so whether that will actually.
That doesn't stop.
The other one that's interesting is the Vox pop that was saying, well, he promised he would improve my job situation, but that hasn't happened, but I'm still going to vote for him anyway. So I did find that interesting. I mean, I think there are areas where there's been an economic pickup, but there are also plenty of those areas where he campaigned very strongly and you know, argued that there would be economic change that hasn't, I think, fully materialised yet.
Although I think in fairness, though, I mean, there's certain things he has that have benefited the economy slightly. So in terms, I think, more people are in jobs now, I think, was one of the big ones. But then also, if you look to a more global scale, he's actually probably the only president in some 50 years to actually have open discussions with North Korea and have some form of agreement with them and a meeting, not just with them, but to bring South Korea and North Korea together. And, you know, granted, there's a lot to do. There is still a huge minefield left to solve with them. But I think to have opened it up to at least a broader scale and invite other people from around the world to see what's going on, I think it raises the awareness, and he's done a good job from that perspective.
And Rory, from your own perspective as an undergraduate reading journalism, having just encountered Jürgen Habermas's theories for the first time today, most people have to have a lie down after encountering Jürgen Habermas for the first time. Here's Rory doing a show. Your thoughts on it?
I think, kind of, you know, looking at it from a broader sense, I think there's a very interesting comparison to be made between the results that we're looking at here in 2018 and comparing them to, as you said, Alex, the swings with Clinton and Obama, because at least over here in the UK, there was nowhere near as much, you know, press coverage and, you know, hostility around those kind of things. And yet we're seeing a similar result. And so what, you know, even if there has been all this controversy around it, clearly it hasn't gone ahead and, you know, made a massive change politically.
And I got a sense listening to your programme this morning, Finn, that there was kind of a mix, a kind of resignation that was coming across from the correspondents who were coming across. I mean, some of the younger people from the university over there seemed to sort of be kind of so-so about the whole thing. It wasn't as though it was a really significant moment. But then again, that's the thing with history. You sometimes don't realise what the significant moments are.
I mean, we're in a kind of... I don't think anyone really knows quite how this will develop now. What the Democrats will push for in terms of investigations, how Trump will respond if they do. I think the other thing about it is...
That was the moment. The other thing about it is, fill in this blank. William, just returning briefly to yourself.
Sorry.
In terms of, never apologise, Finn. You never make a politician. How are you going to get sort of President of the United States if you start apologising? For goodness sakes.
He's a bit tired. He's been at it 24 hours.
I know. But yeah,
did he fall asleep then, by the way?
No, I've just completely lost my train. I've just completely lost my train of thought.
The shock on Ben's face where he thought, do I have to go in for artificial resuscitation now? It's all right. Ben is a qualified lifeguard, Finn, so he can help you out on that basis. It's fine. Anyway, William, anything you'd like to add or conclude? Because we will kind of return to this loosely when we speak to Sid Pierce, Randy Naught, and Phil Leonis as the programme proceeds.
Oh, yeah. There's only one thing I'd like to say about Trumpy, and that is that he is the greatest soap opera since Dallas. And for us Brits, it is just fantastic news. Every single week, we don't know what the next plot twist is going to be, but it's just great. We can't do anything about it. So, yeah, it's thrilling news. Every single day, I look forward to finding out what he's done next.
Do you know, that's exactly, almost word for word, what Jason Whittaker, the head of school for English and journalism, actually said a matter of weeks ago. I think you confirm, or he actually said...
Exactly.
Exactly the same thing. He waits every day.
It's clearly an audience for him.
I've now remembered what I wanted to say, which is that there absolutely is clearly, you know, he clearly has a very strong base who turned out, you know, continue to turn out loyally for him. And that, you know, how that's going to play out, the Democrats are obviously going to have to win over some of those people in 2020. And how they, you know, to what extent they're going to be able to do that is going to be an interesting question.
And those are the messages. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to William, please? Because he's done extremely well sitting in for Anne Lewis, who's poorly and has lost her voice.
William, have you enjoyed your 10 for 9 minutes today in the show?
I've loved it, and it has been highly educational as well. Thank you so much for asking.
Wonderful. And will you join us again next week?
Just as soon as the boss asks me. Yes, thank you.
Look forward to seeing you then.
those of us who might remember Michael Douglas and Carl Malden with the streets of San Francisco, occasionally, as police officers used to do back in the day, engaging in local cuisine with respect to San Francisco and so on. Obviously, the city has continued to develop and grow, so in the 21st century, it's a fantastic place to sample new food and various other factors as well, particularly when you've got the San Francisco Street Food Festival coming up, together with Eat, Drink, SF. We're delighted to welcome now to talk about recent research into showing how maybe the love of British food is something which we can all enhance and become more creative with local cuisine. Well, the only person we can get to speak to with respect to this is the awesomely talented, amazingly wonderful Joe D'Alessandro from the San Francisco Travel Association. How are you, Joe?
Fantastic, Alex. How are you doing?
Very good indeed, Joe. And I won't mention...
I love that introduction, by the way.
It's always important to call them as we see them, you see, Joe. That's the important thing. And I like to feel the spirit of Carl Malden will be looking after us, you know, from the wherever he happens to be at present from that point of view. Of course, I could have gone into Ironside and various other bits and pieces, but I won't do that at this particular stage because that's a whole new world. Let's talk about this research, which suggests that actually when it comes to taking a holiday abroad, some British folk need a little bit more encouragement to go beyond, shall we say, burger and fries.
You know, it's really interesting research because it shows a few things. One, it shows that 91% of all British people like to watch food shows on television. At
we
least
love them.
So
exactly.
That's very popular. And half of British travelers think about food when they choose a destination. Mm-hmm. But when they actually travel, only about a third of them really like to experience the local cuisine. They're mm-hmm. more comfortable with the food that they know on a regular basis. So what we want to do is encourage them when they come to San Francisco. You can, of course, get the local cuisine, that the British cuisine that you're familiar with, but also try something new, try something different, try some of our local cuisine, and it really enhances your experience, your travel experience.
Also, you don't necessarily want to experience the joys of going to the Bay Area and saying, I'd just like to have my traditional roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, please. I mean, much as I'm sure you can get it there, but
you
a different
can get
line.
It there. But there's so much more to try. There's so much more to, you know, that we can offer that. And I think that is the opportunity, whether it's something very casual, a food truck or a street food, taquerias, getting local tacos on the streets or burritos, or going into a 3-star Michelin restaurant, which we have more 3-star Michelin restaurants than any other city in the Americas. There's really a wide variety. And although, you know, when you travel, you love to go to national parks or to visit attractions or museums, but everybody has to eat when they travel. So you're only going to get this fantastic travel experience when you try the local cuisine, at least for part of it.
I'm never entirely convinced by the ubiquitousness of social media and taking photographs of the food we're about to consume. I often think, look, just eat it. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But it is undoubtedly a case that the proliferation of food photography on social media has actually raised the profile when it comes to, I'd like to have something that looks like that.
You know, it absolutely does. And people do follow bloggers, or people follow their friends who are posting about a restaurant or a great experience, and they want to go see that themselves. A lot of people do that, and that's how they determine where they're going to go eat when they travel.
It's particularly interesting in a recent series that the Henson organization put together with the curious creations of Christine McConnell, who's cake decorated all sorts of bizarre ways. But it's fair to say that it doesn't matter whether you're sweet or sour, or indeed cold fish, warm fish, and so on, there's something in San Francisco for you.
Well, we're very proud of the diversity of our food. We have people from all over the world who have come to San Francisco and brought their culinary traditions with them. So they use the ingredients that you can grow here in San Francisco all year round because of our climate and our geography, but put their twists on it, whether it's from Asia or from Europe or from England. They have an opportunity to experience that twist, that very unique cuisine that we have in San Francisco.
Do you have any particular favorites yourself, Joe, where you sort of think, at the end of the day, if I don't have my weekly fix of Twinkie bars, then the world is just not worth living?
Well, Twinkie bars is not probably on that list for me, but there are a number of things that
well
would
said,
be.
Well said, sir. Well said.
I love the Chinese food. Chinatown in San Francisco is the largest Chinatown outside of China, and I think there's some incredible foods from dim sum that you can get where they bring the carts by and you can choose visually what's on the cart and eat that. Some very incredible foods there, to the Italian food scene, to the Mexican food scene is really great. So I don't limit myself to one type of food. I really like to try something different, try a different restaurant all the time. one unique thing about San Francisco is you can go out to eat three times a day, 365 days a year, and never go to the same restaurant twice.
51 years ago, of course, the world was centered on the Summer of Love in San Francisco. Everybody went to San Francisco. Tony Bennett left his heart there. And if we move on from the point of view of narratives still to come, I think Kirk, Spock and McCoy actually managed to rescue a couple of whales from the San Francisco Bay Area. So there's lots of things happening in San Francisco. What else can people go to appreciate, as well as the great culinary experiences?
Well, you know, with all those movies that you've seen about San Francisco where the Golden Gate Bridge was destroyed by the Planet of the Apes or some other creatures, the Golden Gate Bridge is still there. So if you come to San Francisco, you're always going to be able to experience the bridge. You're going to see the incredible architecture of it. You can go to Alcatraz, take a bay cruise to see Alcatraz and the famous prison. You can ride a cable car up and down the famous hills of San Francisco. You can walk from our neighborhoods to neighborhoods and experience the world, basically, in a very short distance. Or you can experience redwoods, the Pacific Ocean. There's so much to do, so much diversity in a visit to San Francisco. And it's all very small. It's all very compact, easy to walk, easy to get around. And they speak the same language. Maybe we have a little accent, but it is the same language.
Exactly. Although it has to be said, in light of recent routines, whether they'll speak the same language in the Senate House and the House of Representatives, who knows? But let's not go there. That's a different line entirely.
I voted. I just want you to know.
Exactly. This is
not going to tell you how I voted. No, but I did vote.
Joe, that's, we expect no less than somebody exercising their right to actually sort of have their franchise from that point of view. Back to San Francisco. Where's the best place to go to for further information for the San Francisco Travel Association and more?
So you can come to our website, which is www.sftravel, like San Francisco travel, sftravel.com, and you can get all sorts of information about things to do, things to see, restaurants, all types of experiences when you come to San Francisco.
It's been, as we knew it would be, Joe, frankly awesome. So two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
I thought it was fantastic.
And the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again with the San Francisco Travel Association? Will you join us and keep us appraised in Lincoln, England, as to the exciting things that go on in San Francisco, California?
I would love to be back.
Thank you very much, Joe. The San Francisco Street Food Festival. I did like the notion, Finn, that British tourists go over to America and stick with fish and chips and roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. It's genius. You know, you want to sort of engage you. I mean, even
I'd appreciate that. That would be my choice of food.
Exactly.
Obviously a fine basis for the new trade deal.
Yeah, precisely. Well said. Obviously, Joe was not going to admit which way he actually voted, but he did vote. So that's, and a lot of people did, Finn. I mean, huge turnouts. And I gather in Georgia that your recent social media feeds have been saying that there's a runoff as well.
Yes, I mean, it's the turnout was up in relation to midterm elections, but I mean the other side of that is Georgia is the big case on this. The degree, the number of places where there were difficulties with people casting their ballot.
That's because the devil went down
reasons.
To Georgia.
Well,
as many country people actually say.
Well, there's one thing actually I want to briefly mention to Finn. I was wondering just get your opinion. So I know in the last 24 hours there's been a lot of controversy around the voting system. So the digital devices that you use.
I say bring back the Chads, personally.
Some people have said, oh, you know, it automatically ticks onto Republican or automatically ticks onto Democrats. And then there's, you know, four out of, you know, ten voting booths are, you know, are off because the systems have gone down.
Well, for
some people. People have left out the queues, walked out the queues because they don't want to wait anymore. Mm. You know, and I wanted to know, do you think the British system, the way you do, you know, traditional pen and paper and a ballot or
pencil,
you know, through
paper,
the post,
not
all that,
pencil.
You know.
In Middlesbrough we have a pencil.
You know, if that, you know, do you think that works better and if so, or do you think we should change the system and go to the American way of doing things?
I think there's kind of three, I'll be very brief, there's three kinds of problems with it. One is simply that the systems they put in place. So after the chaos in Florida in 2000 in the disputed Bush-Gore election with the hanging chads and all that, The Congress actually passed legislation to try and improve the systems, most of which involved giving a lot of money to the states to buy voting machines. The problem of which has been since that a lot of the companies who make the machines have gone out of business, and it's
that's capitalism,
Finn.
That's capitalism.
And it's difficult to source spare parts. So you've got lots of reports of election.
Could they not have contacted Vlad in Russia?
Well, I'm very likely. So there's that problem. My colleague Mike Slavin in Social and Political Science was pointing out on social media that actually it's not as simple as you might think to go over to pen and paper because some states have enormously long ballots.
It's not, you know, whereas with us, usually we just have the one for
one for
MP
party.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got sort of propositions, they've got a raft of state offices, they've got representatives, Senate races, so that's crazy. And then the third thing is that there's then this question about ease of voting, the long lines because there aren't enough machines, because there aren't enough poll workers, the places where the polling station, I mean, Dodge City in Kansas, there was this ridiculous story where they'd moved the only polling station for this town, sort of outside.
Well, that's
of the
because
town,
they didn't believe they were in Kansas anymore.
When it was not on any bus route. So there's kind of a whole separate discussion about sort of voter suppression and very restrictive laws about how you can be legally entitled to cast your vote.
So there we are, Ben. Technology doesn't
pen and paper.
There you go. Joys of the Toys with a Lover's Concerto, taking us around away from the momentary fun of American presidential elections to the equally amusing, or maybe not, world of gender stereotype toys. Yes, a survey of 2,000 British parents by online marketplace eBay found that over a quarter of all parents said they didn't agree with giving their children gender stereotypical toys, but three quarters of them admitted they may well end up buying gender-specific toys for their children this Christmas. Who better to address this than a favourite of the programme, the awesomely talented independent consultant psychologist, TV broadcaster, media commentator extraordinaire, it's Honey Lancaster James. How are you, Honey?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. That was a lovely introduction, thank you.
You should know by now, Honey, that it's always wonderful to connect with yourself, and for a change, live on the Midweek Drive, which is even more exciting.
I know,
it's great. It's like being on Channel 4's The Circle and saying, what are they trying to do? They're telling lies. They're not American politicians. Or maybe they are. Let's move to this little survey, which the team have been scrutinising in the studio. That's Eva and Finn and Ben and Rory. And were you surprised by the findings of this, that we say we don't want to buy gender stereotypical toys, but we do it in any case?
Yes. I mean, I think what I was surprised about was the fact that, you know, according to eBay's research, British parents are feeling kind of stressed about what to buy their children this Christmas. I think it is in light of this debate, you know, do I buy my daughter only dolls? Do I buy my son, you know, Lego and those things? Or should I be buying them very gender neutral toys, puzzles, games? Those were the kinds of things that the survey said most parents would identify as being gender neutral. And I think, you know, this is in line with, so eBay also produced their 12 Toys of Christmas, which is this year's predicted must-have toys. And when you look at the list of those toys, these are the ones that they think are going to be best-selling, that all the kids are asking for. You can see that actually there's only a small number of the toys on that list that you would think of as being particularly neutral gender-wise. Most of them are either very much marketed towards girls or very much marketed towards boys. And that's fine. I think what concerns me is that parents are worried about this. But the truth is that many children do show a particular preference for a particular type of toy. Often, not always, but often, girls will be drawn to, you know, baby dolls and unicorns this year, really, really favourite toys, Barbie-type themed toys. And boys may be drawn to those more sort of scientific or engineering-based toys, Hot Wheels, for example, Lego-based toys. And that's absolutely fine if that's what your child is drawn to. But it's also absolutely fine if you want to give your child toys that are more, you know, gender neutral, such as one of the toys, for example, is a Playmobil SeaWorld kind of toy that really would appeal to anybody. And that's great if you've got maybe mixed gender siblings in the family and you want them to play together because it gives them an opportunity to play with something they're both interested in. It's also fine if you've got a child who's showing a real preference for toys that would not normally be marketed towards their gender. That's okay too. My perspective as a psychologist is that you should always take the lead from your child and go with what they're interested in, because when a child shows a preference for a particular toy and you approve of it and you say, yes, okay, that's fine, you're actually sending a message to your child that you approve of them and that their choices are valid. And that's what's really important. So my message is always take the lead from your child, see what they're showing an interest in, you know, maybe in a toddler group environment where there's lots of different toys to choose from, see what they actually want to go and play with, and then encourage that, because that's what it's all about ultimately. When it comes to Christmas and letting your child write their Christmas list, it should be coming from them. And then obviously, you know, you just encourage their natural interest that way.
Okay, so wonderful little mini sermon there, which is awesome from that point of view. Average.
Yes, I get off my soapbox now.
Honey, let it go. It's important. Use this time to actually vent. That's the important thing. And the fact that the average British parent will buy their children around about 19 toys at Christmas, which is quite significant. Finn, do you have any children?
No.
In which case, none of us in the studio, as far as I'm aware, actually have any children. So from that point of view, we're coming at it as children. So it's kind of almost sort of what...
No nieces or nephews or anything? Anyone buying for this year?
Well, I do, but my niece is obsessed with trains.
Right.
Well, there you go. She's... Brilliant.
See, let's match that whole process. And obviously Santa might well have a train connecting. And what sort of size trains are we talking about?
She's three, so...
So the huge ones, right? Yes. Yeah. So, Eva, what do you make of this
I think that's lovely. You know, that's lovely. There's a girl, you know, showing an interest in something that would traditionally be marketed towards toys. Mm. And what's great about that is we are seeing more of those toys being aimed at these sort of cross stereotypical gender, if you like. So one of the toys, for example, on eBay's 12 Toys of Christmas was a Barbie toy, but it was an ambulance. It's got kind of a medical feel to it. And these kind of toys are great because they're encouraging children to break out of those traditional stereotype roles and say, actually, you know, okay, you're going to play with a toy that's, you know, perhaps it's pink and perhaps you're really drawn to that, but you can also do these kind of jobs. It's a great way of looking up to those kind of adult roles that might ordinarily be thought to be for your opposite gender. So I think that's a great thing to do. Encourage children to play with toys that aren't ordinarily marketed towards them, and it gives them a real sort of message for the future that, you know, you can do anything you want to do in life and you can be interested in whatever you're interested in.
It's thumbs up for your niece then, Finn. So good news on that body. And your attitude to the niece in terms of purchasing things for her. So.
I'll tell her. She'll be delighted. I'll add whole new words to her vocabulary.
Precisely. Eva, your thoughts.
So I was just reading this. And basically, about it saying earlier how many parents... it says over a quarter of all parents say they don't agree. Do you think it's always been this way? Or has it become a more recent thing? I know that obviously the gender issue is more of a recent situation. Do you think it's sort of increased over time and it's become a more common issue?
I do. I think this is something that we've seen being debated in the media quite a lot. And as a result, I think some parents are beginning to feel, I need to give my child, you know, gender neutral toys in order for them to develop, you know, according to their natural selves and the natural interests. And on the one hand, I think that's really well-meaning, and I think that's a great, a great sort of attitude to have, a permissive, a sort of liberal viewpoint, if you like, on what your children should be playing with. So I think that is on the increase because we are increasingly, you know, being told, and I think quite rightly, we should allow people to be their natural selves, that whatever they're interested in, that should be encouraged. So I do think we're seeing an increase from parents saying, actually, I don't want to just stereotype my child from a young age by only allowing, you know, my daughter to play with dolls and only allowing my son to play with trains. I think that is on the increase, and I think that's quite right.
Yeah.
But what we don't want to see is the sort of opposite happening as well, where parents become so nervous about their child being given what would be considered to be gender stereotypical, that then they start feeling uncomfortable with that as well. Because I think that came out of the research that 6 out of 10 of British parents said that they're now finding the whole process of sort of buying and choosing their Christmas gifts and toys for children quite stressful because of this debate on gender specific versus gender neutral toys.
When you talk about the large pile of pink or blue toys under the tree, it could be the American primaries all over again. It could be the midterms, but never mind. Ben, as a lad from Brighton, did you grow up with your collection of My Favourite Ponies and unicorns as a child?
Not quite. No, but I did in fact have Playmobil actually. Interestingly, and I've written down a couple of points. I thought I'd run by you because it's 2,000 people. It's not a large sample size in the grand scheme of things, but it gives you a good idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, in terms of who would you? I mean, obviously, from a business perspective, you've got to look at it as a supply and demand situation.
Yeah.
So obviously, if there's 3/4 of the people are interested in buying more gender neutral toys, do you think businesses have a kind of, I wouldn't say a right, but to do well, it kind of indicates that they should bring more gender neutral.
If the demand is there
in
for gender neutral
exactly
toys, should companies actually follow that? I mean, sense of suggestion.
Yeah. Well, I think it's on the increase. I think it came out that it was 27. So it's quite a small number at the moment. 27% of parents said that they don't agree with giving their children only gender stereotypical toys. Mm. So that's on the increase. Whereas 3/4 of all parents said that they will probably end up buying gender-specific toys for their children at Christmas. And the reason for that is that the demand is coming from children themselves. So typically, a child will write their Christmas list to Santa, or they'll ask mum and dad what they want. And what the survey found is that around about 42% of parents will most parents will buy round about 42% of whatever their child is asking for. So, if the child's listing 10 things on their Christmas list, they'll get roughly about half of them. Now, if those things are very gender stereotypical, then that's what parents will be buying. And certainly that seems to be reflective in, say, the 12 Toys of Christmas list, because you look at that list and you think, yes, the vast majority of those toys are aimed at a particular gender. And that seems to be what kids are asking for. But what we're noticing is that parents are feeling more uncomfortable about that. And what they're wanting to do is allow their children the opportunity to play with gender-neutral toys as well. So, for example, they found that games and jigsaws are a kind of gender-neutral choice for most parents. So 68% said they would buy those. Arts and creative play, so, drawing toys or artistic play, that comes in a very close second.
It looks as though it's pretty
neutral.
Awesome to the extent, honey, and time is as ever moving on, so very briefly,
of course. Any
sort of final thoughts from yourself, Rory, you want to sort of just add?
Just a message for the parents
yes?
out there. I think you should, as you said, honey, listen to your children.
Listen to the child. This is very exact.
Don't.
And remember the little boy that Santa Claus forgot.
Yes.
Sorry, it's just, it always gets me every year. It's just a heart-rending thing. It says a lot of my psychology. Honey, a website, where can people go to find out further details about this and more? Obviously, I'd recommend honeylancaster-james.com, but what else would you like to push?
I'd definitely go to ebay.co.uk/Christmas, and then you can find out what this year's predicted top-selling toys are, the 12 Toys of Christmas, and have a little, maybe chat about them with your son or your daughter or your kids.
Or nephew, or niece, or nurse, or whatever. All sorts of things for that, baby. Honey, it's been awesome. Two final questions. I think you know what they are. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You know that. Anytime.
We look forward to feature again in the very near future, if that's okay. And thinking about a suitable music link to actually take us from this to the news, we'll give it to psychologist Visage Mind of a Toy. Do you think that fits the bill, honey?
Oh, wonderful.
Round of applause for Honey Lancaster James, please. And up next, it will be the Siren News.
Up in you to the table. You see the same old thing. Ain't no food upon the table. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me. Yonder come Miss Rosie, how in the world did you know? By the way she wears an apron. Come to see the governor. She wants to free her man. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special.
Feel if you're getting a bit stressed out with political situations and so on, put on some Creedence Clearwater Revival and the world will be a better place. What do you say, ace musician and sound man extraordinaire Sid Pierce in Missouri? How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Delighted to welcome you onto the Midweek Drive for the first debut of what, who knows, could be a whole range of things there. Thanks to, of course, our wonderful friend R.W. Saunders. And Sid, when we set up this link a wee while ago, you said, oh, it's just going to be immediately after the American primaries. So, is it panning out as you had anticipated? Is it a case of you're a happy elephant or indeed a sort of disappointed mule? Or is it a donkey they actually have for the Republicans? I know it's the elephants for the Democrats. What's the symbol for the...
Donkey, I think.
It is a donkey. Yeah,
I'm getting that right.
Well,
anyway, Sid, your thoughts
it's
on
all the above?
Oh, quite literally, it's like a chimera in all sorts of ways. I mean, was it something which was concerning you? Do you feel as though this is America on the line again, or was it a case of no, we need to go for more classic music? That's what we need in this world.
Well, I definitely believe that music, the saying goes, it calms the savage beast, and I do believe that we can use music as a catalyst to calm people down and perhaps bring people together.
Which, well said, exactly so. So now in the studio we've got four fabulous folk. We've got Eva MacDonald, who's a singer and musician and entertainer,
yes,
who has entertained the troops in various parts of the land, but will be back with us now until at least December when you go off to the South Coast, I believe.
Yes, that's only for 2 weeks though, Alex. Mm, so.
Good, excellent, this is what we like to hear.
We
have Dr. Finn Pollard, who is a specialist in American studies and American history as well, and particularly American historian, who has actually been doing so much work for Siren Radio over the last 28 hours, really. It's been quite phenomenal, really, Finn, and well done to you. And still is conscious after a fashion.
Yes, I think after a fashion is the operative phrase.
That's okay. We've got Ben Lewis, who is an awesome chap from the land of Brighton.
Yeah, good morning, Sid.
And well, sir, actually, is it morning in Missouri? What time do you actually have in Missouri at this moment, Sid?
Right now it's 12 noon.
Oh, yeah. Oh. You needed to be more west, and it would have been fine.
It's only just a few seconds from 12 noon, because it's Central time, which is born. And we've also got from the delightful land of, I believe, not Milton Keynes, Bedfordshire, is it?
Bedfordshire.
That's Rory McGowan, who is a journalist, amongst other things, from that body. Rory, we'll give you a chance to speak to Sid. What would you like to ask Sid about his musical background, which is quite frankly awesome? We've got Soundman for Roy Clark. I've got Malaguena lined up. I got Yesterday When I Was Young. You may never have heard of Roy Clark, but I'm sure you might have heard of many of the people that he's worked for. Over to you.
So, hi Sid. Just interested in how, you know, young were you when you realised that music was what you wanted to do?
Oh my goodness. I remember receiving my first report card in primary school. My dad looked at me and says, well, I guess you're headed to the music business. I started playing in hardcore honky-tonk bars, started playing drums when I was 14.
Which was in which year, dare we ask? I mean, we're talking 1960s here, 1970s?
That would be the early 1970s.
The 1970s, yes. So it's been working through from that, so lots of a system from that point of view. Not sure about the view of the father, though, sort of saying, or the report card saying you're going to music. I mean, what is he saying? That musicians can't become president of the United States? Surely that's going to change on that sort of basis. And talk us through the work as a sound man and so on. I mean, basically, in the words of, as an old audio guy says, testing 1, 2, you are just about to hit your 39th year of mixing live shows. You've played drums in hardcore taverns. Which is quite interesting when you're playing drums in hardcore taverns. I mean, I'm not even sure what a softcore tavern is. But
opposed to the regular tavern.
Exactly. Or indeed coffee shops. Wild parties. No, surely not, Sid. Wild parties in Missouri. And you've also logged over 1,000,000 miles on a Silver Eagle tour bus. Currently you're mixing at 2 venues in Branson, Missouri. And you've seen a whole lot of changes in technology. Actually, Finn, what questions would you like to put to the Pierce Meister?
Am I allowed to ask a question about Missouri politics?
I think so. I think so.
I'd be really, because I'm a political junkie in addition to being an American historian, and so I was watching the Missouri race amongst others. I'd be really interested to know what you think, what you think were the key factors behind McCaskill losing the seat.
Well, as you well know, we're living in very polarized times, and Missouri is, especially the Ozarks where I live, is very, very conservative, and they've doubled down behind President Trump. They're very, very energized. And I've been kind of critical of Senator McCaskill. I've contacted her office several times asking her to please be a Democrat and not be Republican-like, because when you campaign Republican-like versus Republican, it seems that a Republican always wins.
And do you think, just one follow-up, do you think her vote on Kavanaugh was a big factor?
It energized the right. It wasn't a factor with her supporters, but it definitely energized her opponents.
Yes. Thank you.
It's interesting times we live in all sorts of ways, but as we said, music is one of those unifying forces. Yeah. Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, so turning just quickly back to music, Sid. What are your biggest inspirations in music? What kind of bands did you follow when from a younger age, but now more to your age now?
Well, I was influenced by the classic rock of the Cretans that you just played in the lead into this story. And, of course, the Beatles and the Stones. And my parents listened to a lot of country music, and so I had that at home. And so I grew up playing Southern rock and worked with bands like the Marshall Tucker Band and a band called Black Oak Arkansas. But in the 80s, I switched over and started working with Roy Clark.
Of course, the Ozark Mountain Daredevils have also been featured on this show many a time, and they've also had their lines from that perspective. Although I must admit, it would be quite interesting to see Mr. Trump actually do a feature with the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, if only for comedy value. It's just a thought. Eva, any thoughts from yourself?
Yes, so I can't obviously comment on politics.
Well, you can, but you choose not to.
I choose not to. Staying on the music side of things, do you have any current projects that you're working on with your music? And obviously Soundman as well. What does that sort of entail? What projects have you been doing with that?
Well, I'm really excited to be working with two projects right now. One is a songwriting show, which we feature songwriters, usually from Nashville, sometimes from Texas or other parts, coming in and doing songs that they have made famous. And I just finished working with Sonny Throckmorton, who had over 70 Billboard chart hits. And that's been feeding my soul, working with these songwriters. And then I work with a production called Raiding the Country Vault and its sister show in Las Vegas, Raiding the Rock Vault. And it's a tribute to classic rock and classic country music. And I've really quite enjoyed those two productions.
Sounds interesting.
Makes sense. Now, in terms of music, I have two possible Roy Clark numbers. And I'm not too familiar with the Roy Clark oeuvre. You might well say, play neither of them, Sid. But we're giving you the choice. We can either have the instrumental Malaguena, which is quite a little upbeat number by, of course, Roy Clark, or Yesterday When I Was Young, which is a bit of a nostalgic number also by Roy Clark. Which one do you want to point the listener to, please, Sid? Malaguena or Yesterday When I Was Young?
I was really impressed. The very first time I heard Yesterday When I Was Young, it captivated me. Of course, that was written originally in French and translated to English later.
And I have to say, first time I heard it, it was Bing Crosby who was singing it. Which, of course, leads to the classic line that was used many a time in the 1970s, what is the difference between Bing Crosby and Walt Disney? Bing sings and Walt Disney. Play the record.
It seems the love I've known has always been the most destructive kind. I guess that's why now I feel so old before my time. Yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet as rain upon my tongue. I teased at life as if it were a foolish game, the way the evening blues may tease a candle flame. The thousand dreams I dreamed, the splendid things I planned, I always built to last on and shifting sail. I live by night and shun the naked light of day, and only now I see the years ran away. Yesterday, when I was young, so many happy songs were waiting to be sung, so many wild pleasures lay in store for me, and so much pain my dazzled eyes refused to see. I ran so fast the time, and youth at last ran out. I never stopped to think what life was all about. And every conversation I can now recall can concerned itself with me and nothing else at all. Yesterday, the moon was blue, and every crazy day brought something new to do. I used my magic age as if it were a wand, and never saw the woods and the emptiness beyond. The game of a love I played with arrogance and pride, and every flame I too quickly, quickly died. The friends I made all seem somehow to drift away, and only I am left on stage to end the play. There are so many songs in me that won't be sung. I feel the bitter taste of tears upon my tongue. The time has come for me to pay for yesterday. Was young.
And off he goes, Roy Clark. Splendid. Sid, we have a couple of more questions for you if you're still there in Missouri and all set and ready to continue with this awesome connection.
Yes, I
marvellous. We knew he was there. We just had to wait a few seconds. So, Rory, would you like to quiz Sid on this musical question, which effectively has been buzzing around whilst we were listening to Yesterday When I Was Young?
So, the song we just heard, how long have you been working on that then, Sid?
Working with Roy, I'm sorry?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the question I was actually expecting originally, but never mind. Yeah, how long have you been working with Roy Gibson? Or Roy Clark, I should say.
Since 1985.
Wow, that is very much older than I am.
But it's all time. So, go on, what's this question that you have regarding classic rock?
So, when we were talking, as your song was playing, I was wondering if you were a big fan of Meatloaf, as he happens to be my favourite artist. And I just kind of have to ask this question before...
To everybody, actually. It's one of those things. Even if it's off microphone when he asks the question, move the microphone closer to your good self. Just turn it around slightly. There we are. Ben's just done it for you.
Sorry about that.
That's a much, much better, you see, because otherwise it looks like you're talking off. It's just a radio drama. Sorry, it was a sound man sort of aspect there. And I know that Sid would be very annoyed. Say, for goodness sake, sort the microphones out in the studio. Sid, what are your views on the Meat? Or the Loaf?
Oh, I think he's... I really believe he's one of the most underrated talents ever. It's amazing just kind of what kind of pipes that guy really has.
Yeah, I've said that for years, actually. You know, it's not a case of being anti-vegan in any way, shape or form. He has got an amazing set of pipes. Eva, you are also a fan of The Loaf.
Yes, well... I'd say a fan. I mean, I've heard two songs in particular, Dead Ring for Love and Bat Out of Hell. Do you have any favourites in particular?
Right now, what I'm seem to be listening to the most in classic rock is well, it's not really classic rock, but this band called Blackberry Smoke. I think they're touring Europe about once a year now. But they, to me, they're old-school southern rock and roll.
Interesting. Particularly as we're going to be juxtaposing in a few moments with Randy Naught, who's on the West Coast and is very much into surfing musicians, which I would have someday said there must be a kind of mashup between you guys in Missouri and kind of classic Ozark mountain rock and so on, and the surf scene. I mean, maybe that's just my fantasy, but I just think it could work somehow, you know, in sorts of ways.
Bit too Beach Boys, I think that is.
You think so? I don't think the Beach Boys could get together with Ryan Clark.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Sid, you can have that.
You know, there's a connection.
Yeah, thank you, Sid.
What a boy.
There's the connection.
Was Glenn Campbell, And we worked a ton of shows with Glenn Campbell, and Glenn Campbell was a Beach Boy, so it's not that far removed.
You see? The message is there.
There you go, Ben.
There we go. I inadvertently gave you the right answer there, Alex.
Exactly. The Wichita Lineman, the whole notion of where's the playground Susie, and a whole range of other sort of elements can be put together. And let's not get started on Rhinestone Cowboy, because otherwise I'll just be washed with tears. It's just too much, really. Sid, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Thank you so much for joining us from Missouri. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link? Do you feel as though R.W. Saunders would be proud?
You know, I can't speak for R.W., but he certainly knows how to speak for himself, and that's what I adore about him.
Exactly. That's the message we take. Never done the show, but he's booked the whole range of folk in all sorts of ways. So can we look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future, Sid? Will you come back and entertain us with a whole range of lines regarding music and more?
Oh, I would look forward to it.
A round of applause for Sid Pierce, please. And Eva, Bat Out of Hell or Dead Ringer for Love. Which one are you going to go for?
Ooh, could you play Dead Ringer for Love, please? I love that tune.
Well, in which case...
Thank you very much.
This is what you get.
Air Piano. Air Piano, indeed. That's what one of the co-presenters are actually doing. Anyway, we move on. We've talked about Missouri. We've talked about the rock scene in Missouri. We go on to another connection for whom we can actually thank RW for, because he recommended this soul who was so wonderful on his last piece that he was actually teaching guitar to people across the Atlantic in the studios who didn't even have guitars in their hands. It was that kind of amazing scenario that Randy Naught, you just go the distance. Welcome, Randy. How's life in California?
It's a beautiful morning in California. It's sunny and warm, and the fishing boats were out all night catching squid with their lights on, and they're headed back to port with their full of squid, and it's crab season has opened, so everything's productive and happy. We finished our elections here, and now we're trying to sort out what happened.
Exactly. And before we actually move into that, I'm delighted to say Penny Evans has even sort of contributed with her little line there. Lots of heart. She liked the Meatloaf track as well. It's wonderful. It's well,
thank you. That's my choice.
Thank Eva, you very much.
Yeah, exactly. It's great stuff. It just keeps the thing going. So let's move on, Randy, to what you've been getting up to recently. I mean, actually, we'll do an introduction. In the studio, we have Eva McDonald, who's just been entertaining people, as she always does, but this time she was in a particular part of the country. 8 months in Salt Fleet?
8 months in Salt Fleet since March. Beginning of March.
Randy, when you next come over to the United Kingdom, if anybody gives you the opportunity of doing 8 months in Salt Fleet, just say no.
It'll drive you insane, just, I promise.
It's, I mean, as we said, we'd like it to maybe like a sort of a 3-year stretch in Alcatraz, possibly. Yeah. Before it became a tourist attraction, but still. Sorry, Salt Fleet. We love you, Reese, really, and I'm sure we might return in
it's
a different
one for the
life.
Nature lovers.
Notice the word might.
The other words there from Ben Lewis. We also have Dr. Finn Pollard, who's been doing fantastic duty covering the election for the Siren Radio listener over the last 36 hours. And we also have Rory McGowan as well. So, Rory, new to your good self, Randy, as indeed I think is Ben. I don't think you've spoken to Randy before.
I feel like I might have. I can't remember.
Don't be confused with Randy Reinholtz. Of course, he's from San Diego.
Maybe.
Different.
I did have a good look at the links you sent across earlier about Randy.
So what would you like to quiz Randy on before I kind of queue up a Challenger's epic number for the presidential midterms, Tidal Wave?
So, music within the surfing world. How do you go about creating it? Do you do it on the vibes of surfing itself, or do you do it around the theme around surfing? Or, you know, how do you go about it?
Well, originally it started in the 60s, and we had that sort of baby boom generation of kids that were born during World War II and afterwards, and we were at that stage in our age group where we spent a lot of time here in Southern California hitting the ocean and doing outdoor sports because it's such great weather, and in the evenings you wanted to do something, so those of us that had learned to play instruments, formed bands, and started playing for dances. So surf music originally was dance music, and we would play the songs that we liked. In those days, you had basically three radio stations that would play 40 songs over and over again, and you didn't have that wide variety. So some were dances, some were folk songs, some were, you know, all kinds of things in the AM radio days. So we would play about 3 hours a night in a local rental place, you know, a hotel ballroom or a Knights of Columbus Hall, and kids would pay $1 to get in, and just you'd see your friends from the beach, and guys would meet girls and dance, and that's what surf music was. So we became so popular, someone asked us to go in the studio and record some of that surf club dance music, and we did, and that was our first album called Surf Beat. And we had no idea there was such a pent-up demand for it. And that album, Surf Beat, sold about 200,000 copies in the first 2 months in Southern California. And people said, wow, let's do that. And several other bands were signed and recorded, and about 30 albums came out in the next year. So surf music is basically dance music from the Southern California ocean culture.
And as I suggested earlier in the program, I think it's just awaiting that mashup with the Missouri sound of Central America. Middle America. Let's not get confused with any kind of Latin American sort of packages here. Although that could be a work as well. We could actually put both sounds together. And just as Glen Campbell manifested himself, wondrousness would actually sort of emerge. Finn, any thoughts from yourself?
Well,
or would you like to listen to some of the music from the Challengers?
I'm happy to either way.
Let's have them, because they're very short. They're so Moorish, the Challenger sounds, really. I was so tempted to go for Tidal Wave. Then I began thinking Kamikaze, so much in keeping with the American presidential scene. Yeah, you got your thought there.
Only a madman runs. Or mad woman.
The views of our co-presenters. let's not go down that road, Finn, because we've already done the gender non-specific items for toys, etc. Randy, Mizalu is, of course, probably one of the most popular, but we've got Kamikaze, we've got Tidal Wave, all by the Challengers. We've also got the joys of Ramrod, or Let's Go Trippin', or indeed Mr. Moto. Which one would you recommend?
I would say Mr. Moto, because that was one of the first instrumental tunes that we recorded and originally wrote. Because, you know, as I said, it was basically dance music. We played a lot of songs by a lot of different artists from it, and some was a Latin influence. You know, you had a lot of different cultural influences. But when we got down to writing original songs, Mr. Moto would have been one of the very first ones, and still punk bands play it, like Agent Orange, and Japanese bands play Mr. Moto. The Ventures, that was the one song that the Ventures chose to put on their first album, and we actually they asked me to come and the band members to sing on it. We sang Oz in the background on the Ventures version of Mr. Moto. But let's play Mr. Moto if you like. I'd love to hear it.
Really, Finn, they're taking away microphones from CNN correspondents. They should be listening to the Challengers, as Penny Evans would say. She was watching Trump's press conference, but decided listening to the show would be far nicer. That's the way to go, isn't it, Randy? Play some music, let it roll, let it rock. What did we make of the Challengers and Mr. Moto, please? Eva?
Well, it was a different mood of song compared to earlier. I can't remember the song that we played earlier.
Yesterday When I Was Young.
There we go. But it was very nice. I feel like it's up and down today with the music.
Up and down. Like a surf. Like hanging ten.
No pun intended.
Yes. Working through a hobby. Rory.
I could surf to that.
Yeah.
I loved it.
In fact, you've got the board out now. You're waxing it as we speak. And it's late evening here, Randy.
We've got a lifeguard here. If anything goes
exactly.
Wrong.
Ben's ready to go.
It's all gone wrong already, though, isn't it, really?
He's got his Speedos to hand. And Finn, what did you make of the joys of Mr. Moto?
I enjoyed it.
I think it's well done, Randy. It's great stuff there. And I'm funny. I was so tempted to actually go, Let's Go Trippin', but I thought perhaps not. Or an Tidal Wave. We'll squeeze one anyway. Randy, there's something about the West Coast sound that still resonates in the 21st century. But I think we would be remiss not to actually have a brief chat about that thing that's been happening in the midterm. So, Finn, would you like to quiz Randy on thoughts regarding, of course, the independent state of California and the rest of the country?
Well, actually, what I'd be interested to know is there was a profile in the New Yorker last week, I think, about Newsom, the new governor, who I hadn't previously been paying much attention to the race because I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he would be the new governor, and there was some talk in that he might be another in the increasingly long list of possible 2020 or later candidates for the presidency. Do you think Californians would view him as a good Democratic presidential candidate?
He might be. There are several to choose from. I was watching the press conference too and turned off the sound so that I could accept your call and talk about the
and which is making you happier, Randy? Which is making you happier, having the sound of Trump or the sound of the Midweek Drive?
I would rather dance to Mr. Moto. And remember, that was the key to the song. If we were playing a song that kids danced to, then it was a right song to play. And Mr. Moto was one of those tunes. As you were playing it, I was remembering some of the dance halls we played and played that song and looking out there and seeing 200, 300, or even a couple thousand kids dancing, because at that point in time, we began to fill up the old ballrooms that were built in the 20s and 30s and 40s for those huge 24-piece dance bands. And we were, with five people, we were filling up those dance halls with thousands of kids. And it was just an amazing experience. And when you think of that California sound, you have to take into consideration that down here in Southern California, there was this fellow named Leo Fender who was making guitars and amplifiers for country artists, and he was the only local guy that was making amplifiers and instruments, so we would go to him and ask him to help us fix our equipment and make it better sounding so that we could fill those big rooms with music. And when you think of your English sound and you think of Jimi Hendrix or you think of Jimmy Page or you think of Eric Clapton, you think of all of those guys are playing Fender guitars, Stratocasters, Telecasters, all of those great Jaguars, those even Shadows, those are Southern California sound, surf sound, things that were launched by surf music, plus the Fender bass was the initial, all records in the 50s until we showed up were using a stand-up bass for those hit songs with Bill Bailey and Rock Around the Clock and Elvis and Pat Boone and all those people. They used a stand-up bass, but you couldn't really fill a room with that, so I played the electric bass, and Leo made this great electric bass, and having electric bass, it changed the whole feel of rock and roll, made it much more driving and powerful. So when you think of the influence that surf music had, it launched, after surf music came out, nobody used a stand-up bass anymore. They moved to that electric bass and that driving rock and roll sound. It changed the sound of music.
And we appreciate the fact that we can still discuss it even decades later, and quite rightly so. We don't say Bach has been decomposing for years, so we actually still talk about him, a decomposing composer. Finn, any final thoughts you'd like to raise? Nope. Ben?
Yes. So when you start making music, is there any kind of, what are the recipes as to making a new song? Do you kind of look to what you've already made and then source inspiration from that, or do you look at what's
a little pinch of guitar, a backdrop,
or do you look at what other people are doing, or things that you feel like you might be able to fit the gap? You know, find that little gap in the market.
Oh, absolutely. We loved what other people were doing. That was our original inspiration. Was, you know, we're kids in high school. We grew up in the public school system in California where you had free music lessons and you learned how to play instruments and you got together with your friends and started playing and had a groups. And you played songs that you really liked. And thinking of songs that we liked, I mean, you think of a guy like Link Wray. Link Wray had a song called Rumble. And Rumble would be one of those tunes that, a simple tune, easy to learn. You love the sound of it. And if you think of Rumble, if you could play that sometime, that's the launch of the original power chord. You know, that's the blam, 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 bum, 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 open, open, E, dun, 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 dun. You know, those kind of songs are just, and they're still powerful. I've been working with Quentin Tarantino on his new movie, and he and I went to the same high school, but about 20 years apart. And when he did Pulp Fiction, he originally used four songs that I played on in that music, and he's using music that I worked on in his new movie now, which I think it's, what, 1967, is that what it is? Yeah,
It's working on so many ways, and that's even before he starts to work on Star Trek, but who knows what'll happen. He's still got a couple more movies left, he says, and then he'll actually wrap up his Tarantino oeuvre. It just shows the quality that's there forevermore. Hannah Brown will hopefully be connecting us very shortly from the joys of Harwich. But Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Randy Naught, please?
Of course. Randy, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, I was looking forward to this, thinking about what was going on and your end of the studio and how much fun you were having, and grateful to be included. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure. And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so. I look forward to it.
We hope so too.
Here comes the wave.
Fond of my English friends.
And we are like our American friends as well. It's wonderful. It's a tidal wave. Now, our channels are open. Whether Phyllis can connect via Skype, who knows? But we can guarantee that as the surf heads off there with a tidal wave, a tsunami, it takes us to Harwich. Harwich, with, of course, is home to the awesome Hannah Brown, who we never forget our midweek drivettes, do we, Eva?
No, we don't.
Exactly. Hello, Hannah Brown. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Well, unfortunately, I'm not in Harwich at the moment, so...
Oh, well. So
undermined this whole segue.
I thought we'd worked on this in rehearsal, Hannah. Honestly, I mean, I know you graduated with first-class honours this year, but please, you know, sort it through. I mean, you know, how else can we actually sort of go directly to the immortal words which say...
Hannah Brown, historic Harwich heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
Yeah, ruined now. Never mind. So we'll have to cope with that whole...
So surely it's somewhere else beginning with H.
Hell, Hull, Halifax, there's so many lines we could actually go to, we'll just have to leave it. Yeah, that's very true. Finn has been all across the American results of the elections, and even the CNN removal of the microphone. It's very good.
You've taken it away from me after that. Degenerating into incoherence.
Not at all. It would all work splendidly its own way. But Hannah, Essex is obviously the greater for you actually being there. Indeed, Ben, also in the studio.
Hello.
Has been regaling me with tales of some of the extraordinary tales that Hannah has been providing for online Essex readers.
Oh, no, it's wonderful, some of the stuff you share, Hannah, from time to time, and the titles that you've had to come up with are very inventive.
Quite frankly, yeah.
They are inventive.
Sort of Harry Potter.
You're a follower of Essex Live, then.
Or follower of funny stories. I don't know, it depends what you kind of class them as. But yeah, it's very good. It seems like you're working very hard.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good fun. A wide range. I've covered some very strange stories, as you say. especially the court ones.
Yeah, we best not go any further on that one, obviously. That's a live broadcasting.
It's best not, Alex. No, it's best not.
Yeah, yeah, step away from that, but suffice to say for the listener, it involves parts of the anatomy we don't want to go into. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, oh, you've read it then, Alex.
As I said,
I
always like to keep appraised of what our graduates get up to. It's good sort of pastoral sort of line from that. Rory has just started his undergraduate work here, reading the journalism studies programme and journalism BAJ, etc. And we don't want him to set him off on the line of anatomical sort of issues. But anyway, in the studio, Finn Pollard, Eva MacDonald, Ben Lewis and Rory McGowan. What's life been like since you graduated, Hannah? Because it's such a long time ago when you got your first star system. I know you're still in the running for a Royal Television Society Award, but what's it been like not returning to Lincoln and not being part of the Midweek Drive, even when Eva's been 8 months away in Salt Fleet entertaining people?
I know.
It's been very different. It's been busy. I sometimes can't believe it's probably been like 4 months. I've been at the new job over 3 months now. And I really do miss Lincoln and everyone there. It's great working and, yeah, getting paid to do something I enjoy. But, yeah, time's gone really quickly. But at the same time, it feels a while, if that makes any sense at all.
Well, the good news, Hannah, is that you are in the 2019 calendar, so, you know, that's a result that you can actually take into the whole range of things there. Finn, what questions would you like to put to Hannah Brown, who I'm sure has also been all over the American presidential primaries, or indeed American primaries.
Well, I've asked loads of political questions. What's the new job you're doing?
I'm a multimedia journalist at Essex Live, which is based in Chelmsford, Essex. Currently, because we have different roles in the newsroom, it's interesting, like the digital first newsroom, but they still publish about 5 different newspapers. So I'm currently the sole sort of main reporter for the Brentwood Gazette. So it's been interesting filling a paper each week, a new thing. But then I also cover other stories around Essex. So range some kind of interesting court stories, as well as some nice ones. I got to go to a fireworks display at the weekend for free, which was nice. It's really good.
Do they copy a lot of material across the 5 papers, or are they 5 distinctive public? How far do they keep them distinctive?
So it's quite distinctive in that there are some stories you will only do for print, and there are a lot of stories you'd only do for online. Probably more very local community stories will go to the specific papers. Some of the ones that are good examples are called trending stories. So they're the sort of things that people are interested in. They're maybe not overly newsy, but you wouldn't put them in a paper. The sort of one that's been circled around all the websites that are owned by our overarching company. And today, one of my colleagues was doing sort of new Christmas sandwiches, and they were sort of reviewing them. I only mentioned that one because he's laughing because of some of the rather savage comments.
Hannah, did you say you were talking about new crisps and sandwiches?
New Christmas sandwiches.
Oh, new Christmas sandwiches. Yes, yeah. That was new crisps and sandwiches. I know that Piper's is actually subject to being taken over by PepsiCo. It's not going to be the same. I'm sorry.
How un-Lincolnshire.
Exactly. Yeah, I do make that point that it's, you know, one of the Lincolnshire's own brands taken over by a multinational conglomerate. Sorry.
It's the evils of capitalism.
It's like Kraft and Cadbury's. Don't get me started. I'll leave that to one of my students who's doing a dissertation on the analysis, but still, life continues. So Christmas sandwiches. And are there any new Christmas sandwiches? I mean, are we going vegan for Christmas?
I'm not. I couldn't go have a Christmas without my turkey and the pigs in blankets.
Yeah, once again, you see the William Sitwell approach is still there, you know, still being echoed, but never mind. Sorry, don't worry, William Sitwell will return, as indeed with Phil Leonis, I'm sure. We're still waiting for him to come through. We might have to sort of dial him on the other landline number, but are there any new Christmas sandwiches that your colleague has actually said, gosh, this is really exciting, we're now having this and this in a sandwich?
I don't think there was any he was really excited about. I mean, there was a prawn cocktail sandwich, but he wasn't excited about it. He was more intrigued.
A
prawn cocktail sandwich.
Cocktail Christmassy. I mean, particularly Christmassy.
You tend to have it before roast dinner as a starter, but the idea is it comes with brown bread anyway, so technically you can make your own sandwich there.
Well said, Ben. I mean, Phil, is a
wouldn't it just be a prawn mayonnaise sandwich?
Phil Linus, are prawn mayonnaise sandwiches currently in these democratically challenged days in the state of California?
Obviously, my compassion goes out to Vladimir Putin for losing control of our Congress. But I heard the phrase pigs in blankets, and I knew that was my cue to call in.
Nice.
But I'm stunned that you were hung up on the crisps and that. I mean, I understood that you said new Christmas sandwiches. The obvious question to me is, what is new Christmas?
I think they're just new ideas. They're taking Christmas food and try to put it in between some bread, and it's a Christmas sandwich.
So the sandwich is new, but it's the same old Christmas we've always known.
Yeah,
same,
exactly.
Same
old Christmas. They've not completely changed.
You know how
Christmas.
These advertisers, you know how marketing people are, Alex. They constantly need to rebrand. It's new Christmas. It's now 20% more Christmassy.
Phil, no. The new thing is there's a day for everything every year, every day, basically. So it's like Pi Day one day. It could be Broccoli Day the next day, and the day of the vegetable, the other day.
Rory, you may recall I started off the seminar this morning with, congratulations, it's World Responsible Tourism Day.
Yes,
oh,
you did.
That's great.
I mean, really.
Is it really?
There's a month dedicated to hot dogs, I'm pretty sure, somewhere in the year.
It is indeed World Responsible Tourist. I'll pass this over to Finn. We haven't had time to squeeze it into the show this evening, but I'm sure when it'll be World Responsible Tourism.
I mean, really,
Day
people are getting bored now, aren't they? They've got far too much time on their hands. They've been days or anything.
This is great. I want to start, I'm going to do this on Instagram every day. I'm going to say, you know, in honor of it being... New Christmas Sandwich Day, you know, hashtag New Christmas Sandwich Day, international. You got to say international so everyone knows, oh, I didn't know it was International Cat Day. I better post a photo.
When's
this great.
When's International Phil Linus Day?
Well, that's any day of the week that ends in Y. Any day of the week that ends in Y.
I'm loving this. Every Briton who goes abroad throws away loads of pool inflatables.
Exactly.
Really?
You know, these are the messages that clearly our Brexit's negotiations are hanging by a thread on. How many inflatables will we leave in Europe and how many will we throw into America?
Too many, Alex.
Yeah, these are messages that are critical.
But it is international, truly international, because your reach on the Midweek Drive knows no continental bounds, so it truly is International Hannah Brown Returns Day.
Yay!
So I want to hear more of Hannah's adventures. So that's what I want to hear.
Thank you.
So share with us then, Hannah, what new adventures would you like to bring to the listener of the Midweek Drive?
I don't know.
For a moment, I thought she was possessed by the spirit of Sid Pierce, but it's okay. It's okay. She's all right. She's sorting through the whole process. We've got the whole range of sort of little items coming through from that point of view, so all will work well in the whole thing. Ben, would you like to assist?
So, Hannah, can we expect you to be back in Lincoln anytime soon?
No, that's not going to happen. Sorry.
Actually, me and my mum are planning to come to the Christmas market at that weekend, because my mum never got the chance to come visit to see it while I was in Lincoln. The one time she actually got time off work to come, it was last year when it got cancelled. So,
It was an international Christmas market day. Precisely.
We should make that the International Christmas Market Day got cancelled.
You've got the critical messages.
Hannah, unless we've got to expect a very small but albeit brief visit to the studio, no doubt. And if not, an honorary... siren broadcast from the market.
Now, you did say you weren't in Harwich, Hannah. So where exactly do we find you today? Are you still in Essex?
Yes, I'm in Chelmsford. So I've finished work 43 minutes ago. Well, not exactly. I left a bit late. So because I work in Chelmsford and live in Harwich, I have to get on my way home a bus and two trains. On the way into work, it's three trains and a bus. So I'm on my way home, and I'm just standing in the entrance to Chelmsford train station, just watching the board. I'm still okay in the train park yet.
This is, you could almost have a surfboard being developed on this basis. Anyway, Phil, you've hopefully caught some of the programme. Who would you like to speak to? Would it be Rory? Would it be Finn? Would it be Eva? Would it be Ben? It's up to you. I mean, it's your sort of final 10 minutes of the programme. Off you go.
None of those people, because I am now triangulating where Hannah is on my map and looking at all these extraordinary parts of the country there near. First of all, Harwich looks beautiful. I'm looking at photos right now. It looks very, very cool. And unless I'm mistaken, it's near Ipswich, which is always captured my imagination because it's the home of the fictional Arthur Dent in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So very exciting. And I don't know. I've got no point here except that I'm planning my next travel. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, Harwich is sort of across the river from Ipswich, so it takes a long while to get to by car. But there's a foot ferry that you can jump on to get between the two.
there actually is a question, though, that I would put to the entire panel that I would love to know, because, you know, these Christmas markets are not something we have in the States. This is very much a European tradition. And it did strike me that the Christmas market in Lincoln must be extraordinary. In all of your experience, is it truly one of the most extraordinary Christmas markets that that the UK, let's say, has to offer? Or is it just pretty much like what most towns in England have?
Eva.
Well, I really like the Christmas market. I always look forward to it. I've never been to any of the bigger cities, so I can't comment on those.
Apart from Saltfleet, of course.
I'm never going to hear the end of it.
I'm really not, aren't I? No, but speaking for myself, I would say it's a very good market. And Phil, if you're ever in Lincoln, you should come and visit it.
Again. Because he has been in Lincoln before.
Oh, have you visited it?
He's actually sat on the very seat that Finn's occupying at present, actually. There's an aura of Phil Dills.
I'm honoured. Yeah. I'm not worthy.
Have you been to the market before, Phil?
No, I have not. I was not brave enough to come during winter.
Well, it is a bit cold.
Yeah, I grew up on the west coast of California, so I'm not built for cold exactly. I mean, it was cold. What was it? It was April or May when I was there, Alex, and that was already cold enough, quite frankly. But I do want to come for Christmas. I mean, it actually is sort of a dream that I have often had, many, many years I have had, which is to spend the holidays in England. And but just having visited the cathedral. And I'm not going to mention that it took Alex 2 hours to drive us there from the university, but to visit the cathedral and, cars can make right turns, Alex, I'm just saying. But anyway.
I won't even go there, please. You know, carry on.
But no, having been there and seen the architecture and seen the streets and seen, you know, I just could imagine how, I don't know, just kind of being transported by the tradition of it and by those ancient, literally ancient empire streets, right? I mean, it would just be something so out of time and so out of the immediate here and now that I think I would find it just really moving.
Finn, Christmas markets.
Not my cup of tea at all. I tend to avoid the whole thing. Yeah.
Christmas and out. Markets, or just...
No, I don't mind Christmas, but well, apart from I hate buying gifts.
Well, your niece can actually get a non-gender-specific role sort of from that point of view, to do with trains, so that's a result.
I'm taking her to the theatre for her Christmas present. So
pantomime?
No, a version of Room on the Broom. This children's TV series she's a big fan of is being done in London.
I was going to say Room with a View. That's a different one entirely.
Differences.
Ian Forster, starting a very old.
In fact, I've got some. I wouldn't say fact fruits because it's from the Daily Mail, but
it's clearly reliable.
We call that a newspaper.
The Daily Fail, in fact. No, it's in 2015. Lincoln Christmas Market was devoted the best in the UK.
There you go.
But it's gone downhill since then.
No!
How would you know if you've not been?
let's just ease back here.
I'm not being serious.
It is wonderful. It is a pretty thing to do, so I would recommend it, okay. Phil. But it's the hotels get booked up very quickly when the dates are announced the year before, and
and of course the costs also run rise constantly.
They do indeed. Right. So it's a big consideration.
I would point out to those hotels and the people booking, I would just call and I would say, look, this is a show business emergency.
In fact, you should call it International Show Business Emergency of the Day.
Exactly. It's International Do a Los Angeles-based Filmmaker a Favor Day.
And it happens to time with the Christmas market, even better.
Okay, is the best line so far to come out of the show, certainly one worthy of selling Siren FM t-shirts, I think. I don't mind Christmas. I think that was that's the kind of touching sentiment we want at this time of year. Siren FM, I don't mind Christmas.
Works for me. Rory, as a relative newcomer to the Midweek Drive team, just your second show almost completed now. Have you ever attended the Christmas market? Is it in your list of things to do?
I have attended a Christmas market. I haven't been in Lincoln long enough to attend the Christmas market here in Lincoln. But I'm quite glad you bring it up as a European tradition, because it's not just Christmas markets that some countries do. I was in the Czech Republic a couple of years ago, and they were doing an Easter market. Mm. And they sell all kinds of different trinkets and lovely things, and I bought a little mole teddy bear. And I think markets just have this fantastic kind of vibe around them that makes it feel really homely.
Tomorrow morning in this very radio station, we'll be actually having Sally Mundy from the Lincoln Agriculture Society talking about the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair, which takes place on December the 1st, December the 2nd, a kind of pre-curtain raiser for the Christmas market.
2 days into the advent calendar.
There we are. Marvellous. Hannah, is that your train? Are you about to have to leave us? Because we hadn't forgotten you there, obviously, in Chelmsford. But obviously, if trains are coming and you need to sort of go, I was just going to actually ask you, do you want to ask the team those last two questions? Because technically, you are... did you start before Hannah Eva, or was it sort of summer time?
No, I think... I can't remember when I started. It was 2 years ago, nearly three.
No, a long time ago. Anyway, Hannah, would you like to ask the team the last two questions, please?
Okay. How does it work? Because I'm on the other end of the telephone. I've got it. Have you enjoyed my telephonic link with you guys today?
I think it's been so good, we're going to have to dedicate a day to it.
it works for me.
Will you be letting me join you again anytime soon?
Alex?
Yeah, I think so.
Only on the anniversary of the day, though, surely. That's how this works.
Okay.
Well, if I may, I would invite her to share my my time slot anytime. Because I've certainly enjoyed watching Hannah grow up on radio. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I can't actually see her, but you know what I'm saying.
International share of time slot day.
I'll come up with more interesting stories. Although I can't believe I forgot the one for today. A guy came in with photos of a UFO. So
photos of a UFO. She dropped that in seconds ago.
The quote was, "I'm not a UFO nut, but that looks to me pretty much like a spaceship."
Area 52.
I really hope aliens, when they arrive on Earth, don't find Essex first. I'm sorry.
Assume that hasn't happened, which seems unrealistic. But the truth is, even if you believe in UFOs, and even if you think this is the greatest discovery, I actually have to break it to you: really good Christmas sandwiches still outweigh extraterrestrial life. You know, because there's so much out in the universe we can't control, but we always get to choose what we have for Christmas lunch, and that's what matters.
And what better way to wrap up the primaries? By the way, are the Georgian things still as exciting as they were a few moments ago?
Well, I think there will be a recount. There may be lawsuits from the ACLU as well, so it's going to stretch out for a while, I think.
And was Donald on form at this press conference? But he was obviously competing with us on the Midweek.
Sounds like it was classic Trump.
Classic Trump.
He couldn't say the word midterm, which was fascinating. He gets into these things where everything comes out like Covfefe, right? But he won't admit ever that he makes a mistake. So he comes out and he says something along the lines of, it was really great. It was an epic matrejama. And then he goes, instead of saying, I mean, he says, and he attempts to say the word again, and he still can't say it. There's something odd about
Trump himself, quite literally, there.
Possibly an alien. moving on. Penny would like to say, we have a nice Christmas market in Buxton. Sometimes they set it in a Victorian style, and York's another good place.
York, yes.
And Birmingham as well, apparently, is a good one.
Thanks to William Coles, Honey Lancaster, James, Sid Pierce, Randy Nort, Hannah Brown, Phil Dearness, Ben Lewis, Dr. Finn Pollard, Rory McGowan, and Eva MacDonald. Eva's back with us, and Hannah's back with us. Yay! Ah, that's it. We are basically out of here. We're back again tomorrow morning. Ben, you're back with us tomorrow morning?
I'll be in the morning, yes.
Marvellous. Eva, you may be back. You don't know, but you'll be back next week.
I don't know. I will try my best, though.
Magician David Fox will be with us. You will be seeing in all sorts of other bits and pieces. That's it. That has been the Scion Radio Midweek Drive, kind of combination with all sorts of other bits and pieces. Finn, do you feel as though we've given justice to the American presidential or the Indiesa primaries?
Absolutely, and I'm now going to crawl home and collapse on my sofa.
Phil Dearness normally has that effect on people, it has to be said, you know, after listening to a few moments, it does connect there. Phil, a good time by yourself over in California?
Sure. I mean, you know, I open a container of paint thinner and I listen to the Midweek Drive and...
It's the way forward.
And I inhale all the goodness from both sources.
Exactly. And that, if ever you wanted to have a trade agreement established on those foundations, would definitely be a route forward. So, Phil, back again with us next week?
Of course. I have nowhere else to go.
We haven't even mentioned the fact that The Lady Killers is out there on a number of platforms. You can access this. Can we do that in Britain as yet, Phil, or is it still a case of no, you still can't reach it online via all those devices like Amazon and so on and so forth?
Well, look, on the ladykillersmovie.com, there is the link to all the on-demand platforms. I would not put it past certainly the college-age crowd to be able to know how to hack into American on-demand platforms. Look, if the Russians can hack into our elections, you can certainly watch my movie. But it isn't available on any internationally based on-demand platforms yet. We'll negotiate that after the new year.
Exactly. Hannah, we'll let you go now. Many thanks indeed. Take care. We'll see you again very soon. And we've already thanked everybody in the studio. So we're out with a variety of key sort of elements to take us round to the news, including 3 a.m. at 6. But Hannah, what sort of phrase would you like us to wrap up with today? Keep watching the skies, perhaps? Keep eating the sandwiches?
Keep watching the skies, and if there really is an alien, let me know.
That's a long phrase.
We just call it International Day of the Alien.
Exactly. I think we'll stay with keep watching the skies. A one, a two, a three. Keep watching the skies.